Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. So good to have you joining us. This is February 1st, 2021. How about that? How time does fly when you're busy and having fun. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listeners. We say that each and every week, and have been saying that for nearly 10 years. We've been doing this podcast a little over 10 years. I created that opening comment a number of years ago, probably 9 years ago. Anyway, so we say it each week, but it's true. We're just so grateful to have you. Again, our best reward is to hear that you are listening and thousands of other mortgage professionals and real estate professionals or those interested in our industry are listening as well. As a result, our commitment is to bring you timely information in audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. In our Hot Topic segment today, we have a friend of mine, Scott Harris, CEO and founder of Social Survey, will be joining us. In fact, they're going to be making an announcement today live on our podcast about the rebranding of the company. So we're going to really stay involved all the way to the Hot Topic segment. Not going to want to miss this. Last week's Hot Topic with Dr. Doug Duggan, the chief economist for Fannie Mae, was really well listened to. And check out some of the latest links. We're so grateful to our relationship with the GSEs, Fannie Freddie, and for them being a part of this. We're also so grateful for our sponsorship with the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Make sure to go listen to the January 4th interview of Michael Frattantoni. Michael is the chief economist for the MBA. We had a great interview talking about where the MBA's forecast is for the new year. We covered a lot of forecasts in the new year, wrapping it up last week with Doug Duncan. Also, Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution helps you create a powerful and simplified borrowing experience for your lenders. So check out Finastra's Mortgage Bot solution. Also, we had Dan Putney on with some interesting survey data. That was on January 11th. Check that one out. Also, Lenders One and Mortgage Collaborative. These two co-ops are great ways for you to connect with peers and vendor members. And we're members of both of these co-ops. They both do a great job of helping you as lenders interact with your peer group. We were talking to one of my clients who's a member of one of the groups and was saying, boy, the peer analysis we got out of that was so valuable. It's amazing. So check out Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Great co-ops to join. We belong to both of them. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Listen to the interview we did with Michael Jones on September 21st, 2020, as well as Indicom, partners with lenders and servicers and mortgage insurers and title insurance companies to help achieve one specific goal, and that is to help them grow. Check out the interview we did with Linda Bomar, August 31st. Also, Incelerate, who helps lenders close more loans by engaging better with borrowers, prospects, and past customers. August 17th, we interviewed Josh Friend. Also, Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE are two great companies. Knowledge Coop does a great job of their training. Mobility RE helps you make sure you connect with loan officers, as does Modex. Both Modex and Mobility RE have a similar product. We have more and more clients signing up for both services because how they complement each other. But check out both of these. It accesses the NMLS data, and both of these companies will bring that to you in different ways. Again, I recommend you check them out. Finally, I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week to this podcast. Let's get over to the MBA Mortgage Minute with Rob Van Raphorst and hear what the MBA has for us.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the Senate Banking Committee conducted a hearing on the nomination of Congresswoman Marsha Fudge to serve as the Secretary of HUD. The hearing is the first step in the confirmation process. In her opening statement, Congresswoman Fudge pledged to increase the supply of affordable homes. The hearing also covered the adequacy of housing policies to ensure homeowners are able to access forbearance and avoid foreclosures and evictions. Given the narrow majority in the House and the busy Senate floor schedule in the weeks ahead, a swift vote on Fudge's nomination is not expected. Also last week, Senators Ben Cardin and Rob Portman introduced the Neighborhood Homes Investment Act, a bill that would create a new federal tax credit to fuel development. A key priority in MBA's advocacy efforts, this bipartisan legislation would encourage rehabilitation of single-family homes and attract $100 billion in development activity to underserved rural and urban communities across the country. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
That's that. Confirmation is not expected to go well. So when you have the MBA and Rob saying, yeah, this may take a little while. Anyway, Rob, thanks so much for bringing us the update. Let's run over to Les Parker and get this week's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
We walk this COVID street on the boulevard of broken dreams. Where the lockdowns creep, and we're the only ones walking sheltered streets. Protests of lockdowns around the globe hit equities and fixed income markets. Global unrest that began years ago increases with inadequate COVID-19 responses by government, whether autocratic or democracies. Economic disruption hurts people. Dreams die, and the feeling of abandonment rises. GameStop points to the democratization of finance. It increases the risk of unintended consequences from central bankers adding liquidity. Data analysts have a tough road to help businesses understand multifaceted risk. People yearn to work and shop. Till then, they walk alone. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, go check out the TM Spotlight newsletter at tmspotlight.com. And you'll get some great information. I was wondering if someone's going to hit on all the interesting information that went on last week in the markets. Hey, Matt Graham's here, founder and CEO of MBS Live. And with his market update, Matt, good to have you here, friend. Good job pre-recording your segment last week. You really did a good job. So
I got the right inspiration recording for this podcast. What could be more inspirational?
What could be?
Other than
you.
Maybe trading GameStop. It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really swing a dead cat without hitting news about GameStop or headlines or people asking you about it. We had questions on MBS Live in the chat about, oh my gosh, could this happen in the MBS market? And the answer is no, probably not. It was sort of a unique situation with the stock market and options and whatnot. I'm not an expert on all that stuff, but it is very interesting. And I do think that it did spill over and move the broader market. And it definitely seemed to have an effect on broader stock averages, but not necessarily in the same direction that GameStop was trading. So it's a curiosity. It's something that's fascinating, and we'll have to see where it goes. But as for the meat and potatoes for bonds, so last week started out fairly strong in a nice way. This was part of a multi-week push back against the highest yield since March 2020. That we saw back on January 12th. So that was itself part of the momentum that followed the Georgia Senate election. Yield spiked, it found a ceiling, and they've been moving lower ever since. That momentum continued at the beginning of last week. Things were looking pretty good, and suddenly we found ourselves in a situation where it looked like 10-year yields might actually break below 1%. Gasp. I mean, that is who thought that could happen after we were stampeding up toward 1.2% a few weeks ago? So that was optimistic, and econ data was, you know, mixed to stronger. There were a few weaker reports, but in the cases where the reports were weaker, there were fairly decent silver linings. I'll tell you what I mean here in a second as I run down the data. But first up, home prices, very, very strong, up more than 1%. On a month-to-month basis. And Dave, check out the annual totals. Here's what happened for FHFA home prices. The annual price gain was up to 11% from 10.3% last month. And that's huge. That's just staggering. We didn't even expect that, even those of us who had optimistic forecasts for an inventory squeeze creating higher prices. Case-Shiller, somewhat similar amount of improvement. They are running a bit cooler in terms of their annual level, but from 8% up to 9.1% annually. Really, really stellar there too. Consumer confidence roughly in line with forecasts, but better than last time. MBA purchases and refis were down a bit, but they are cooling off from a really solid long-term highs 2 weeks ago. Durable goods was the notable miss of the week, came in at 0.2 versus 0.9 and sharply lower from 1.2 last month. But core CapEx component that strips out some of the more volatile components was in line with forecasts at 0.6 versus 0.6. The Fed was out on Wednesday afternoon. Normally, the Fed's really important. This time, not so much. We didn't really expect them to change much about what they said. And what they did change was fairly bond friendly. It wasn't significant, but if you had to make a case, was that good or bad for bonds? It was bond friendly. And Powell was arguably bond friendly as well, reiterating that it is not yet time to be asking him about tapering. They're not talking about it yet. It's not going to happen anytime soon. And there was really not much reaction to that in the bond market because it has been driven home in the run-up to what's known as the blackout period, which is the week before the Fed announcement, they don't give any public speeches or answer questions. And before that, they've done a really good job of leaving markets with as little uncertainty as possible about where they stood on tapering and policy. They would love to see some fiscal support, and they're going to keep buying bonds, and they don't think that they're going to stop that until inflation is really doing well. And even more importantly, they want to see job growth. Speaking of job growth, big jobs report coming up on Friday this week. And that is going to be interesting to see if that is a market mover. Because as the Fed points out, with jobs being so important, it's interesting to consider that we are still 10 million jobs short of pre-COVID levels. Mm-hmm. And if there's one big yeah, but to economic optimism fueling a drive toward higher rates, it's that we could be coping with permanent job destruction. And the bond market's going to have a hard time reconciling skyrocketing towards super high yields with that being the case. NFP on Friday. Real quick, back to the end of last week, yields lifted off after they hit 1%. Maybe a bit of a technical bounce, maybe a bit of month-end position squaring. And moved to higher levels a bit by Friday, found their footing. So we're entering this week kind of in the middle of the range for the past few weeks. We're no longer stampeding down below 1%, but we're not in some sort of panicked sell-off either. In addition to the jobs report, we have the ISM reports. We already had the manufacturing one this morning. It was a bit weaker than expected, but the inflation component was the highest since 2011, just to keep an eye on as far as things that could drive inflation. And then we have the other ISM report on Wednesday, the non-manufacturing version, expected to come in at 56.8 versus 57.2. So that's it for econ data. And then, of course, GameStop has now become silver, from what I hear. So silver commodities are the new Reddit trade.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I'm looking at ADP National Employment coming out on a Wednesday. Talk about that number.
If you click on those in the econ calendar, it brings up previous results. And you can see like came in at minus 123. And then you go back a few reports and that's up around 749, 365, 307. Those are all hundreds of thousands. So really sharp contraction in job gains. We lost jobs last month and forecast only create 45,000 new jobs this month. If you look at the weekly econ calendar and you can see that non-farm payrolls, very similar, only forecast to come in at 50,000 after losing 140,000 jobs last month. There's two teams. There's team rising rates and then there's team not so fast. That type of econ data where we're only creating 50,000 jobs, that is like batting cleanup for team not so fast. If you can't create more than 50,000 jobs a month, then it's going to take 15 years to get back to pre-COVID levels. So, yeah.
Good job. So glad you're part of the podcast. Appreciate you being here,
thanks,
friend.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. If you want to check out the extended trial period, what you do, put in LOL and go get the extended trial period and then sign up. No credit card is required. Matt, thanks so much for making that available to our listeners, friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good one.
You too. Alice Alvey, it is so good to have you here with us. Alice is CMB Vice President of Education and Training and Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's legislative update. Alice, so good to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. Happy Monday, everybody. So no news is good news as far as no new legislation has hit the table. I love that. I'm so happy we're not in the news right now. So I think the main thing is to really make sure everyone is focusing and responding to the Federal Housing Finance Agency's request for information on appraisal-related policies, practices, and process. This is due February 26th, and I've focused on this a couple of weeks, picking a different section, and today I just wanted to zero in on a couple of things related to this concept of, should we increase appraisal waivers? Should the agencies have more control over the appraisal process? Is really how I read this, right? They've got lots of data, and how can we leverage that for more appraisal waivers? And Dave, since you brought up statistics, I thought I'd throw a couple out that are in this RFI that are quite interesting that say that as of December of 2020, 63% of loans with less than a 60% LTV were delivered to the enterprises with an appraisal waiver. Now, notice the phrasing there, because they'll say they issue an appraisal waiver and it's up to the lender whether to accept it or not. So a little twist of words there. We're going, okay, well, to us, we're going to take it, right? I don't know who doesn't take it unless you really know something about the property. So that's a lot of appraisal waivers already on those lower loan to values. I think what's really important as lenders take a look at their responses to this, I think there's a need to really consider separating purchase and refinance transactions. That's not really on their radar as a direct question. But as we look at the impact to the market, if FIFA grows in their control over the appraisal process, allowing like a hybrid approach where their data plus someone going out and inspecting that the house is still standing from an exterior view, not having to go interior. That's one of the things that they're really trying to see how the market feels about this. Now, if you have it on a purchase transaction, how does new data get into the system, right? The more appraisal waivers I have related to purchases, then how is house price appreciation coming in other than from their data? And I think there are a lot of markets that might have a challenge with that over time. So a lot to think about here as we try and think longer term impact to the markets. In the short term, like I've said, we all love more appraisal waivers, but there's a lot to really think through here to make sure that the structure is such that it's a good one. And the piece I would also bring up is I'm really looking for where is the appraisal subcommittee and state licensing in all of this? If the driving argument is that we don't have enough appraisers, it's difficult in a lot of markets to get an appraisal timely, especially in markets like we've had all last year. How do we get more people interested in that field is not just on, well, let's waive it. Do they really need 2,400 hours of education to do a mortgage appraisal, right? Is there a hybrid approach like we did with CFPB and state licensing for loan officers? Is there an easier licensing path that could be considered? And I'm really curious, once we can get more access to some of the comments that have been made on this, to see what is the Appraisal Institute and that angle of the industry looking at in terms of letting go of part of the process and saying, would we let a realtor do the drive-by? I think not. We'd probably have to have somebody who's arm's length from the transaction. Well, we don't have that network established yet. So where does that come from? Why can't it be a stepping stone to becoming an appraiser and make it less of a barrier to entry and easier to get into? So food for thought as we continue to talk about different ideas and how this might work. It's a great open door to put some change into the industry and leverage the data we have without impacting markets. And of course, we want to make it easier for consumers. That's my 20 cents for today. And we have less than 30 days for the new loan application. Everybody should be working on that.
FHFA's wanting responses by February 26th. Everybody, come on, be aware of it. It's your voice heard. Great report. Thank you for that reminder to do so. When will we be able to start looking at results of some of the postings?
Right now, I'm not able to find all the comments that have been posted so far. So we'll keep looking and I'll let everybody know. We'll send you a link that you can get through Dave's website.
Yep. Send it over to Nikki and we'll get it up there. Very good. Alice, thank you so much. Appreciate it as always for bringing us a timely and important update. Thank you. Let's get over to Alan Pollock with the tech update. Alan, good job. Always last week got a lot of feedback on your comments. I don't know why you get a lot of feedback. You've got a lot of tech people.
I need a couple of fans out there. Appreciate
that. It's the weekly tech report update this week.
So many crazy things going on. Let's start with this. The following words describe what's going on with Reddit and Wall Street Bets, right? And all the GameStop news, depending on which part of the news you listen to. Yep. Social disruption, the power of social media, internet fringe culture, the anarchic community of online day traders. Basically, Wall Street Bets has 4.5 million members. I went through it a lot of times this weekend, and personally, I almost actually went and started buying some stock. I almost just spent $100 to see what happens because of just the chatter and what people are talking about. It's right. All over the news. It's all over the media. They truly are making a difference. I'm not saying what the difference is, if it's good or bad. But they have some clout right now. They're doing social disruption. And GameStop, as we know, it's up 2,200%. Interesting, though. Wall Street Bets has been around for a couple of years. And it started with Hertz. Here's just one example. It's 59 cents a share. There was a lot of chatter about Hertz. It was about 2 or 3 weeks worth of time, why people loved Hertz. Then it went up and it joined on the Robinhood top traded list because people started basically doing small trading. A lot of people were buying options, actually, because it's very low risk in options. And then what happened is it grew tenfold in just a few weeks, and then Hertz disappeared. So there are a lot more stocks that people are talking about. As we know, silver is up right now because of precious metals and the conversations going on there. What I can tell you is they're talking about Nokia. They're talking about Bed Bath & Beyond. There's a huge conversation right now on the internet about how GameStop could actually become the online collaboration distribution of digital games, because a lot of people are saying GameStop's dead because the more systems that come out, they're all digital.
Right.
And so the conversations, I saw a couple of them online about how GameStop could teach fintech about digital disruption. Very interesting. It wasn't just one article. There was about two or three I saw like that after a short search. So anyways, lots of great stuff. If you just want to see what's going on, just type Google, type Reddit, Wall Street Bets, and you can see all the chatter and what people are saying. None of these people are experts, but they have the power of community, power of social, which is really interesting. So let's move on. So anyways, so this is pretty interesting, David, but just coming off of the whole social conversation, the line between fintech and traditional providers is blurring. This is an article in NASDAQ, and what they say is that fintech players are building momentum and gaining share, and some are now seeing those vendors as incumbents. And there's a chart that I just wanted to say. What they're showing is three things: digital customers, mobile customers, and the percent of digital sales. Since the pandemic, mobile customers has exploded. We now have more mobile customers than we do digital customers. And the percentage of digital sales has continued to increase. Not only that, but neobanks. Okay, so let's talk about digital banks, the new generation of banking.
Yep.
They had some market share, less than 5% market share in 2012. Just about 10% in 2018. It dropped a little in 2019. In 2020, it's gone over 40% digital market share. So neobanks are continuing to expand. It's basically, you've got to get digital, you've got to get ready. And the traditional bank, the traditional way of lending is something that is disappearing, especially since this pandemic is not over yet and we're finding new ways to innovate and capture new business. So with that being said, Dave, where am I going today? A couple different things. One is we've got the Super Bowl coming up, and we've got all those awesome commercials from Rocket Mortgage. There are going to be two commercials this year. They're doubling down. They're going to feature funny guy Tracy Morgan. It's also going to include an action star, athletes, and influencers. And what they're going to be talking about is why Rocket Mortgage is so important for the home process. They're going to be focusing on mobile, which we just talked about, and they're going to be focusing on brokers the first time ever. How a local mortgage broker plays an important role in helping Americans achieve the American dream of homeownership, as Rocket Mortgage has said in their press release. And what's kind of funny is Rocket Mortgage just released what they call Rocket Pro TPO. And they're stirring the pot with mortgage brokers, especially going after UWM. It's basically a directory of 43,000 individual loan officers that have worked with Rocket Mortgage in every broker in the country, and the ability for consumers to go online and search for their loan officer. A couple other little things in the news, David. LoanLogix just released a new Humda Direct Check. You want to check it out. They basically can get through an entire checklist automated with doc processing, you name it, in just a few short minutes. ICE Mortgage Technology just came out and said that average days to close a loan are still 50 to 60 days. They're still up there. There's a lot still to do in the mortgage process. They keep talking about how technology is working, but to me, right, being in technology, we're still chipping away at the 48 days to close a mortgage is still an excessive amount of time. And we have a lot more work to do there. You guys remember Loan Sifter, just because we're talking about brokers, Black Knight just released their Loan Sifter update, 120 wholesale investors on that platform. David, outside of that, I hope everyone has a fantastic week. Thanks for listening. Any questions, how to get me, it's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com.
Yeah, great. Good job. And neobanks, that is an interesting topic.
What's even scarier, David?
What's that?
Is the fact that there's not a good amount of financial literacy. The fact that the newer generations are growing up not going to the bank and not learning about saving and not really understanding. So we've got a more important role of education, not just financially. For financial institutions listening to our podcast, financial literacy across the board is important. But for the mortgage side, it's education about the mortgage process. I don't think that's ever going to go away.
I just got asked to go out and speak at our local high school on mortgage finance. And they said, be prepared. These guys are really sharp. And so the next generation underneath them, whatever that generation is, it's in high school right now. At least this group supposedly is really up to date. We'll find out. But thanks so much, Alan. Great job. That ends this week's weekly mortgage update. For those of you listening live, we're going to move right on into the hot topic segment. For those of you listening on a downloaded basis, you can just check out the next episode, which is what we're going to be listening live right now. Welcome, everybody, to the Lickin' on Lending Hot Topic segment. We've got Scott Harris joining us. He is the CEO and founder of Social Survey. So anyway, Social Survey is rebranding. Let's hear this. So honored that you would come on, Scott, on the podcast to talk about that. Social Survey is a great product, but talk a little bit about what Social Survey is.
Well, we're an experience management platform now. So we focus on helping companies get all the value out of the voice of customer and voice of employee. So that means a lot, and it continues to expand, but we are truly an experience management platform.
And you had a big part in that, Dave. I remember early days. Just sort of reminiscing. We were sharing rooms and driving to conferences and driving back and barely had two nickels to rub together, just trying to get this thing off the ground. And I remember sitting with you at a conference, you were graciously giving us your time, and you said, you got to narrow this thing down. You got to easily, with three words or so, tell people what this is. That was a great day.
We'll sit around and talk about it for the rest of our lives. It was just one of those unusual events. Mm. Well, we do this, and it sounds like this. And it's interesting because I had the same conversation with my brothers getting into consulting. I said, Dan, what's your why? And he struggled to get it out. I said, you got to get it down. So anyway, what are you doing this year for building value for the mortgage industry? You've done so much, and I want to talk about that.
So I think that we are so lucky to have started with this complex, engaged group of folks. So when you think about voice of customer, Social Survey, it was a survey platform that collected voice of customer and shared it, right? Very good name at the time for what we did. But starting in mortgage, a lot different than all of our competitors. Most of our competitors started like location-based reputation, or just long-form operational surveys, right? But we started in mortgage. And there was a loan officer that was a route to market, and the loan officer needed to do stuff with voice of customer, sharing and reputation. Then there were locations, and they needed to do stuff with the voice of customer. And then there were regions, and many of those, because of the way we're built, had different brands altogether, right? Lots of DBAs in this category.
Right.
And then as you go, you have regulation and escalation, and you have this fantastic group of people that always say, like, as we built this out, they say, can it do this? Can you share it here? Can you make it do this? Can you rank? Can you, right? And so they were the very engaged group of people. And then we created the Create Wow Summit. And then we created our partner advisory board. Yeah, and so when you think about the way we evolved, it was just listening to our voice of customer. And as we evolved and kept challenging it to do more, it got bigger and better and more powerful. And I like to think about it like a ripe fruit. And if all you're doing is collecting voice of customer, then you're just barely squeezing the juice out of that fruit. But if you collect voice of customer, use it to engage people, use it to retain people, use it to create new business, use it to make data-driven decisions, use it everywhere that you can use it, then the ROI, you just keep squeezing, and there's just more and more juice. And that's what we learned. And so we built, whether it was the Create Wow book or the Create Wow Summit or all the voice of customer, just this massively engaged, and we don't lose customers, right? So a lot of our customers have been on for years and years since we started. Like I say years and years, 2015. And so what happened was, coming out of the book, we just took all that learning. And then to write the book, you had to learn what all your competitors are doing. You can't just take a position without just a knowledge of what everyone's doing and why they're doing it. And so coming out of that, and with all the stuff we learned, we said, guys, I think we have a roadmap for the future of a category here. And so 18 months ago, we just dug in and we've invested millions of dollars and lots of developers and lots of moving parts. And we built the future of customer experience management.
I love that roadmap. And it really is about experience. So talk about your new name. I'm going to miss Social Survey because I thought it was a great name, but I love what you're really doing.
As the roadmap came together, Dave, we said, this thing is not Social Survey. It breaks my heart to lose Social Survey, but I got to be honest with you. Me and the team got together and we said, like, what is this thing going to be, right? And we said, this is the best platform. It deserves the best name. And the name we kept coming back to was the name of the category itself. We're like, wouldn't it be great if we could just be experience? And it's like, experience wasn't for sale. They wanted like $8 million. In other words, go away. So I can't believe somebody didn't buy it for $8 million. But later this year, Rebecca and our marketing group had stayed connected to those folks, and they were ready to divest in some assets. Now, it wasn't inexpensive, but when you think about CX, last year, $510 billion was spent on CX tech, and most of it legacy tech, right? And so when they came up to us with a price, she said, it's going to cost this much, was just close to $1 million, right? And she came to me, and I thought about it for a second. I said, yep, buy it. And she goes, wait, what? You want to think about it? I was like, no, buy it. That's a deal. That's tell them if they'll give you your price tonight, then we'll shake on it tonight. So unbelievably, weareexperience.com.
I love the name, and then you have the platform. Talk about that.
I'll be honest with you. Just think about our audience in mortgage. Now, this platform works for every vertical, and we're growing really fast. Like now, this new thing, a company comes in one way, shape, or form, but now they log in, and whether it's servicing, or it's their call centers, or their HR team, or their distributed retail group, or whatever it is, they have an account for that group. And then they go into that group, and then they have hierarchy management for that group. And then they are able to measure at whatever moment and use skip logic and conditional logic. And let's just pick one, distributed retail, right? Which is the one that made us big. Yep. They can send a mid-process survey just very quickly from a loan officer, how's it going so far? They can send another survey from a processor about documentation. They could send a canceled loan survey when somebody canceled, because that costs us money. There's a hedging loss there, right? So they can find out why people are canceling, and the ROI of that seems pretty big. They can send a whole different survey to purchasers than they send a refi. They could say when someone's unhappy, they could auto redirect them to a longer form to dig in. When maybe they want to send a different survey completely to a real estate agent at the end, it's literally skip logic, conditional logic, and then they want to take certain questions and connect it to employees' behaviors and then drive those behaviors, and they want to use our platform to connect it to their payroll automatically. All that's automated. So we're kind of saying, we kind of where Qualtrics meets Yext, right? This really agile methodology for collecting journey moments, connecting them to people, engaging people. But then there's the whole reputation side. Where else do you want that data other than a CEO's report, other than a behavioral integration? Let's put it on listings, reviews. Let's put it on third-party reviews like Google. Let's put it on your website. Let's put it on social media. Let's put it everywhere. What we realize is that collecting data, analyzing that data, and acting on it is all one thing. That's the future of CX.
Experience Management Platform, XMP.
The XMP, experience.com.
Yeah. And that has a score associated, just like Social Security does. And I love the fact that you can do it intra-transaction while the transaction is still rolling along. How's this going? Get early warning signs rather than waiting in the end. That's very, very good. When you gave out the awards, this is a slight departure off of the new name, but I love how you honor companies that are performing in just real excellence in the area, down to the loan officer level. Just briefly touch on how you give out annual awards. Are you going to continue with that with experience?
You have to, but we're coming up with an experience score to take a look at everything the internet says about a person and bring it all together as one score now that we own the domain. But look, this industry has a lot of really fantastic people. We connect to the data. We survey all the customers. Right? And when we got started, we had some conversations with some of these executives where they said, you need to remove that review. We pay you. You need to remove it. But I'm telling you now that they get it. And we've never done that. I've seen people say they'll fire a loan officer before they'll remove a review. It matters so much. The way that these companies that we work with have excellence as a standard, man. You start to see in your benchmarks the micro deltas between one company and another and what's operational. Right. They have some operational weaknesses, because when a top loan officer at one company doesn't fit into the top 10 at another, it's an operational issue. right? Mm-hmm. So the data starts to get real telling, and we can work with companies and consultants and say, look, the data's saying that you've got too many people touching this file. Let me show you what's different at your company than other companies just using the data. But it's always a difference between 91 NPSs and 86 NPSs, right? Yeah. The companies are so good. There's so many great companies. So yes, we can't stop benchmarking. We have to continue that.
When you start the experience, when we were interviewing you and you were announcing the awards on our program, gosh, that was a while back now. It was just so fascinating, the excellence that's there. Could you talk a little bit about what is the new experience platform? How does it compare to what you did before? Expanding quite a bit. I don't remember you doing the intra loan surveys. I think that sounded new to me. What is it?
Yeah, you just take everything we learned and couldn't expand on, right? I mean, people had to log in to do a second survey. They had to log in a second time. They had to get a whole different account for their servicing group or a whole different account for their call center group. We didn't have chat. We didn't have sites. This is a very expanded use case, but the guts is still the ability to connect to the data, to automate collection, to connect that to people and engagement, and then to drive business outcomes. But yes, it's very different. This is why we are taking one customer at a time, slowly moving them over, teaching them all the power of it, because it's a 10X.
I'm looking over here at the survey that Lawrence McKinley sent over here, and very impressive. But let's get over to some questions with Alice. Alice, any questions on the customer experience?
Well, I'm at the website now. How amazing to have experience.com.
What a great name.
I keep pinching myself. There's been a lot of nostalgia this morning where people go, do you remember? And I have to keep going off camera so I can wipe my eyes, right? Because it's such a big thing for our company. And honestly, even though that was a tremendous investment, it feels like a nothing compared to all the value we're already getting. So yeah, thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, so I guess my question is, this is an area that in my world at the company, I know is huge for the company. We actually have a digital experience officer, and I'm still learning everything about that side of it because it is so absolutely critical in understanding that customer experience and then really know how to process it. So it's one thing, I think, to get the information. Does the system also help process outcomes with it? I thought I heard you mention something that it might assist in kind of closing that loop.
Yeah, so just imagine operationalizing CX in real time, right? Think about a rental car company. You check in, and as you're walking away from the counter, the person who just checked you in hits your phone and says, how was your check-in experience? Think about scanning the card at your hotel, and you walk into the hotel room, and it knows you walked into the hotel room, and it says, would you tell us about your room experience? And you say, well, it's smoky, or I don't have enough towels. And 3 minutes later, because we know how to connect it to the right people at the right time to fix that. But we can also connect that same data to that employee who checked you in, and we can connect it to her payroll. So it's driving engagement and excitement and job satisfaction. And we can also connect it to Google My Business and your website and social media. The power of CX is so much more than waiting till the end of your hotel stay or the end of your mortgage transaction and then collecting voice of customer. Because what happens then? What we're really saying to the customer is your experience is over. Tell us about your memory. Right. What we want to say is your experience is in flight. Tell us how we can improve it. It's a very different world. And if you think about Uber, look at all the behaviors of their drivers that they're driving. If you think about Airbnb, look at how much better our experience is getting. They built their entire platform on a CX platform. There are some companies that really get live, active, interactive CX. And if you think about it, if you really ideate it and whiteboard it, every company in America needs to be more connected in real time to user and customer experience and flight.
Yeah, that was amazing. I think I wanted to make sure our listeners picked up on all that as well, that detail of moving the process from the end to while it's happening can make all the difference. And I love the aspect of, especially in the mortgage world, how often does the operations side hear you did a good job, right? They have to kind of count on the LO or the post-survey to go back and let them know. And this way they get to hear it right from the customer as it's happening. And that has amazing power.
There's so much power in human interactions, man. I'm telling you, there's so much power in connecting Janet, the processor, to Stephen, the customer. So that'll improve Janet's behaviors. Yeah. It'll make her better at her job, make her communicate better. And It'll make her feel rewarded and excited every time she gets that feedback.
That's really good. I love that. Especially when it comes to training animals. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it from the training benefit, immediate feedback, when it's coming in almost on a real-time basis. It's fascinating.
We not only do we manage, when that person mid-process surveys or processing, or whatever it is, instantly, not only does it go to the processor, but it should go to the team leader and to the section manager or the group manager, right? Mm-hmm. This transforms their daily meetings into high fives and opportunities for improvement.
I was just going to say, especially for a training class that might last for weeks, right?
Alan, you're here with a couple questions. I know. I can feel them.
Yes. Actually, I feel like going off the reservation and asking all kinds of questions, but I'm going to stick to the plan. So what you talk about, Scott, I am so intrigued. Maybe just talk a little bit about data in motion, know your customer, improve the experience, how to nurture relationships.
So first of all, Alan, they're doing it. I want you to know that these people on the platform, these loan officers, and even the call center employees, when they get on the platform, there's an interesting dynamic when you import the me, the I, and the interaction. Well, I have nothing to do with that 42 NPS. It has nothing to do with me. I didn't do this, and I didn't do that, and I didn't do the other, and I had nothing to do with that. By the time they call me, they're already upset. But if you survey just me, if it was just about me, if there was two or three questions about me, I'd get 5 stars. There's so much power in that statement, and they're so true. And guess what happens? When we get them on the phone and they know the survey's coming and they're focused on their behaviors, almost every time, no matter what happened prior, no matter what happened before, that experience is turned. It's flipped, right? No matter what happened in the leading up to that call that caused the problem, now you have an engaged person. They know a survey's going out. They know there's a high likelihood the customer's going to reply to it. And they know that when it comes to their interactions, they are going to connect with this customer. They're going to make sure that they answer their questions. They're going to get a better one-call resolution. So whatever it is, when you import the I, people will turn the customer's experience around almost every time. It's interesting. And if you think about every journey moment, let's forget these long-form operational surveys that are 40, 50 question surveys that we only get 2 or 3% responses from. Let's connect people to people serving those interactions. And let's watch the magic that happens when we start to think about and respect those interactions. I mean, it can be one question. We can hit their phone. Hey, when I get off here, they're going to hit you one question. People will take a one question survey about Jill, who they just got off the phone with. And that is magical for the way it can turn an experience and turn a customer into a retained customer, into a happy customer.
You know, it seems pretty obvious, but the value that a mortgage company and LOs gain from this experience platform, again, seems just to be abundantly obvious. But for those that may see this on the negative side, I'm worried. What will people say? Talk to that group that say, I'm not sure I want to bring this in. This actually generates positive behavior.
It does. And here's the thing. We have companies that want to launch and are ready to launch and say, look, we're not ready because our service is not that great right now. Right? I understand. Your turn times are slow. You think you're not ready. You couldn't be more wrong. You are ready for improvement today. And this is a catalyst for improvement. Yep. Right? Collecting voice of customer at every level in the customer's journey creates accountability and drives the right behaviors and fixes problems. I don't think everyone understands that the kind of improvement that can cause and the kind of energy and excitement and the kind of behavioral changes. And so if you think you're not ready, you don't understand that not being ready is the exact moment you have to dive in, right? Nothing's ever going to be perfect. So when things are terrible, it's the right moment, but it still happens all the time.
Yeah, this is such an opportunity to help you start measuring where you're going. Don't wait until you're already at a level where you think you could start getting the good news now. I want 2 success stories here.
2 signals. We didn't lose a logo in the last 6 months. And our customers in the last 3 months have expanded with us 6.7% in the last quarter.
That's good.
Most of that in November and December. That just tells you, once you get on and you start challenging what can CX do for your business, and you start to connect the dots, you can't help but want more.
Yeah. Oh, there's great stuff here. This is a great system. Let's talk about the website. I'm already on it. Experience.com. What a great name. You can learn more about this. And as we wrap this up, talk about a quick client story, if you have one that comes to mind, where this has just helped them turn their business around?
I want to say that this industry is absolutely fantastic. I can't tell you how excited we are to still be a part of this industry. We are expanding beyond it, but this mortgage industry is the reason that we just bought Experience.com. These companies continuing to do more in our platform, continuing to drive behavior. I have CEOs from top companies in this space that just call me to say, hey, how's it going? Hey, congrats on this. Because the real evolution, my favorite story, don't call us a vendor. That's what I love about all of these partners. It's been magical. We got companies like Caliber that use us for 12 different parts of their business. And that's not an outlier. There's a lot of companies like that. So I've got lots of great stories where we're driving behavior and change and seeing all kinds of improvement. But for me, it's the entire industry, Dave. I'm not just saying it, this industry matters and it's really important to us. And it's been magical for us.
Just give you high fives for what a difference you've made in companies and lives. So it's so good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you taking the time. Congratulations. I don't know what that name cost you, but I suspect it is well worth it. Experience.com. Check it out, folks, and get signed up for the Experience Management Platform XMP. I love it. What's your XMP score? We love what you're doing, and we're so glad to have the partnership we do with you, friend. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, we'll be talking to you again here soon. Folks, we've had Scott Harris on here previously with Social Survey, still with the same company, but under a new name, Experience.com. Be sure to check it out, as well as all the things that they can do for you. Great information as I'm perusing through this website. Looking forward to doing so more. We've got Justin Bailey and Todd Jordan of Bellamy coming on next week. They are a survey company, but they do surveys in a different way, not at the customer level. They're doing it on a market basis, looking at the big picture of things. I listened to them give a presentation. I invited them to come on because I thought the value of what they did would be beneficial to you. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders Association, as well as Indicom, Accelerate, Mobility RE, and Modex, and of course, all the others on our website. Check them out. Good to have you with us. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.